from Formula Ford is the fact that we give you
free maple syrup for life.
Try a 7-year, 100,000-mile warranty.
On pre-owned vehicles?
Yep, 7 years, 100,000 miles.
Hold on, I will be right back.
Vehicles certified to be just shy of new with a 7-year, 100,000-mile warranty that's nothing short of amazing.
Oh, I did it! I just sold that pre-owned Taurus.
That blue one?
Yeah, they couldn't believe
that it's Todd Mobley's car?
Todd the Boss Mobley?
Yeah.
Well, that explains the sweater vests in the back seat.
You might want to go to...
lunch?
I was going to say Canada.
Even better.
You, on the other hand, should head down to the roundabout at the junction of 302 and Route 2 in Montpelier or online at FormulaFordVT.com to see for yourself why nobody does pre-owned like Formula Ford.
All right, we're back. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to the competition. Let's say good morning to John Dillon. He's the news director over at Vermont Public Radio. We're not really competitors, right? We're collaborators, all against the evils that are out there in the world.
You got me started in broadcast.
Well, that's actually true now that I think about it. Maybe we had to tell the people the story behind the story on that. You used to be a newspaper reporter with the Times Argus. Then what happened?
2001, I applied for a job at Vermont Public Radio. I needed an audition tape. Do you remember the allegedly the mad cow sheep situation?
Yeah, so they were going to the Felices
and Hooten Freeman up in Greensboro. The feds were going to seize his sheep. I was talking to you and I said, geez, I need this audition tape. And you said, well, just when it happens, just call me. We'll put you on the air live. We'll record it. And that can be your audition tape. And that's what happened.
And you know, the other half of the story was I drove the darn tape over to Vermont Public Radio for you.
Huh? Well, should we not talk about this? I mean, Ken might be listening. But anyway, that's what happened. Yeah. So
how has the transition been from newspaper to radio?
It's been great. I mean, it's been, well, first there's two transitions. I became a radio reporter and had to learn how to use sound in stories and write tighter and, you know, try and write what I had been writing in 2,000 or 3,000 words down to 500 with sort of more spontaneous audio to make the stories come alive on the radio. And it helps your writing. It really does to write for broadcast. You have to be spare. You have to be very immediate. So I did that for quite a number, 12 years. And then last year, about almost exactly a year ago, I became news director. And that's been fascinating and fun because I've got a...
Management.
Middle management. Somebody called it the nexus of journalism and middle management. But it still is journalism. You still decide every day what to cover. I work with a very talented crew of reporters, young and old, or young and mature, and it's really fun. Every day there's something different, and we go out and try and provide coverage of what's sort of the essential news of the day, and then something else. We try and do another story that people don't know about, so it's fun to try and get that mix on every day. And then the whole digital component, the whole online stuff that we're trying to do.
Right, the deadline that never ends.
Yeah, it's not the next newscast. It's the next Twitter post.
I'm worried about the future of newspapers. Are you?
Absolutely, yeah. The news about the Burlington Free Press, veteran reporters having to
reapply for their jobs. How demoralizing is that?
It's got to be. The role that they serve in our discourse, in our democratic discourse. I worry about that. I think your station and our station are providing that service, but there's a lot of there's a big need. One bright spot, I think, is the weekly situation. There's a lot of good local weeklies. Yeah. 7 days is very strong. A lot of communities are served very well by local weeklies, but the revenue model that kept daily newspapers alive for so long is no longer there, and online advertising hasn't made up for it.
Yeah. This trend, too, at the Free Press where they're looking for people to click stories, that worries me, too.
Well, basing coverage on click-throughs, if we did that, we'd be writing about Hedy Topper all day long.
Or crime.
Or crime, because one of our best, most most picked up stories ever was about a year ago, and it was about the alchemist struggles with Act 250, and it got on some beer website, and we got thousands and thousands of clicks. So is that going to drive your coverage, or do you actually apply some news judgment and say, this is, you know, sometimes this is what you need to know as a citizen participating in Vermont? You need, you know, we're going to spoon and feed you or feed you a little news that may not be the most, you know, sensational, but it's essential. So I worry about that. I think that becomes sort of a click-through popularity contest.
We're talking with John Dillon. He's the news director of Vermont Public Radio. If you have any questions or comments, you can join us at 244-1777. That's our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. As you mentioned, you have a good crew of reporters, some younger, some more veteran. You got plenty of resources at your disposal. So what's the hardest part about being the news director?
Well, this may be, for me as a new manager, it's been just that, trying to figure out how to work with a crew of people and, you know, do their employee evaluations, things like that. That's the new part for me. So that's probably the hardest part so far. We have a news meeting every day. We try and decide what to cover and where it goes and how to treat stories that we know about. That's the fun part. I don't know.
So you're really more a reporter than a manager, it seems to me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a reporter at heart, but I have to now be a manager of people as well.
Are you still covering stuff regularly or not?
Not as much. I did a story this week. I noticed just driving over here that there's a bunch of pickets at the Fairpoint thing, so I'm probably going to drive back there and interview somebody at the picket line. We're a little short-staffed right now. Two people are on vacation, so I try and do some work on keep my hand in reporting, but it's not. I learned early on that I was trying to do a story a week and edit everybody, and I was shortchanging both.
Mm-hmm. How did you, when you looked at this election season at the beginning of it, so how did you decide you were going to cover it?
I'm not sure what you
mean.
Well,
I mean, I think we were all anticipating this wasn't going to be the most exciting year for political campaigns. No open seats, really. A lot of situations where there's really not a competition. So as a news director, you're looking at that landscape. So you say to yourself, we're going to do what?
Well, we're going to host a series of debates. We're going to interview all the candidates. We're going to cover their policy initiatives. We're going to, you know, just because someone's ahead at the polls, you know, you can't ignore the race. There are big issues in the governor's race, for example, whether or not the incumbent, if he's reelected, Peter Shumlin is reelected, whether he can pull off single payer financing, you know, changing how we pay for health care, $2 billion price tag. Those issues are being discussed in this race, and we need to cover them.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. You guys don't do polls?
We have done polls. We didn't this year.
How come?
I guess it was a question of resources. You know, we thought about it, and we have done. We have used both D.C. and local polling firms, but we just decided this year that we weren't going to spend the money on it.
Do you think polls skew things?
I don't know. I used to be against polls and driving news coverage because then the story becomes the horse race and not the issues. I do think they're illuminating to get a snapshot of where someone is in that race at that time. I think what people need to remember is that it's very much at that moment. Although it's often used as a predictor of the outcome, it really, what a poll tells you is what those who are polled think then. And things do change. Remember Doug Racine and Jim Douglas in 2002, there was a poll.
Free Press poll.
Yeah.
Weekend before the election.
Right.
And Jim Douglas 10 points down.
Yeah. And so I think they're valuable. They've been interesting in this race. I think we learned that from the WCAX poll that Dean Corin, the progressive Democratic candidate for lieutenant governor, was not as strong as some of us pundits had thought.
Way behind.
So they're illuminating. I think there's kind of an over-reliance on them sometimes.
But, you know, I thought that poll in particular was one that is going to influence people. You know, they're going to say, wow, he's really far behind. Why bother?
That's true. It can have that effect. I mean, if someone you like is just not going to be elected, it can maybe make people apathetic.
Let's go to Randolph. Doug, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good. Yourself?
Not too bad.
On Tuesday, I picked up an absentee ballot. And last night, I received a phone call asking me a couple of questions about, one question about how I felt about Shumlin and Peter Welt. And I answered that. And then this person told me that they knew that I had picked up an absentee ballot and whether I had filled it out yet or not.
Hmm.
Now, how would they know that I had an absentee ballot?
You'd probably check with the city clerk or the town clerk, right?
Isn't that
on a list somewhere? Must be.
I don't know. Is that public information?
Well, let's ask Mr. Public Radio.
I would think it is. If they've mailed you one, it would be available.
They mailed it. I picked it up.
Or picked it up. So they probably have a record of that you had picked it up.
Now, you didn't have somebody didn't help you fill out the thing or something like they do in Burlington sometimes.
No, but I felt like I was standing in the polling place and had somebody over my shoulder to telling me how to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know who was doing the questioning?
I got a caller ID, and the name was Ruby Allen at a real strange phone number, 708-800-688.
All right.
Now, I just thought it was strange that, you know, in 2 days' time, you know that I got an absentee ballot.
Yeah.
And I know that when you go to the polls, it's illegal to campaign even in the parking lot.
Right.
Now, here I get this phone call that's, you know, even asking me if I filled it out yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right. Well, that's interesting. Thank you.
Well, it sounded like some dirty politics to me.
Yeah, sounds like you're on a list somewhere, and somebody's being pretty aggressive about checking the list frequently, too.
Yeah, well.
Thanks for your call. I appreciate
it.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. How do you think we're going to remember the governor's race 10 years from now, John?
Strong incumbent with a tough record to defend on health care as his signature issue, facing a reluctant GOP candidate.
Why do you think Scott Milne got into this?
I think he decided that it would be a good thing for the party and the political process to run. I think he got into it late. I think he was unprepared for the rigors of the campaign, the demands of the campaign in terms of, you know, having events and really having position statements and so forth. As you know, there was a fair amount of maneuvering prior to the primary deadline about who was going to run on the GOP side. And I think he felt he had to step up.
How do you feel as a news director? Yesterday he was on with me talking about this strategy of his where he's dropping these issues kind of really in the last 2-3 weeks of the campaign here. As a news director, what's your reaction to him doing that?
Well, we covered it yesterday, his education initiative, in which he's hoping to get school districts consolidated and use some of the savings, get the per pupil spending down to the national level, and then capture some of that savings for college tuition. It's an interesting and detailed proposal. So we did cover it. Bob Kinzel covered it for us. So we what we would, as you know, someone directing the news, that's obviously a news event, and it's an important proposal from the GOP. So we're giving it good coverage.
Well, let me ask you it this way. Do you feel as though you have adequate time in the next 3 weeks to really kind of get in back into this and to really either explain or expose it to voters?
I think so.
As opposed to coming out 2 months ago.
Right. Well, I think that's more of a question for the candidate. Does he, you know, is his timing working for him in terms of covering the news? We are going to do a story about his proposals on property taxes compared to the governor's and the other candidates. So I think there's time to cover the issues in the weeks remaining.
We have that piece coming out at noon today, so I don't know when yours is coming out. 244-1777, our local number, toll-free 877-291-8255. Do you have a theory on why Dean Corin seems to be so far behind? He's got the Democrat and the progressive banner.
Well,
and last time I checked, it's a pretty Democratic state.
It is. But voters in Vermont often split tickets. Phil Scott's a popular incumbent. He's carved himself out as a moderate Republican. He's had a message consistently that we can't be, you know, the Tea Party Republican Party in Vermont. We need to embrace more moderate issues. And I remember, you know, people voted for Reagan and Bernie Sanders in the same election.
Right.
So
yeah.
we do that here. And I think, you know, Phil Scott is probably a more accomplished statewide campaigner. He's done it. Dean Corin ran for the House, was a House member, but I think the statewide aspect of campaigning maybe hasn't taken off with the voters on a personal level. That might have something to do with it. He's not getting – Pete Hirschfeld of our staff did a story about the Democrats not really throwing their money and organization behind him. As you know, there's a split in the Democratic Party on whether they should be supporting PDs. And they didn't include him on a big mailing. So, you know, perhaps he's not getting that. Maybe that's showing up in his poll numbers as well.
Yeah, he would have had to pay to do that, too.
Right.
I'm just wondering about his decision to go with the bus sort of radio route, not more heavy on the sort of flashy TV, given how little he was known.
Right. He says his problem is name recognition, and TV would be the way to surmount that fairly quickly, I would think. So that's his political strategic choice, I suppose.
Yeah. And he's had plenty of money. So
that's right.
$200,000 to work with here.
I know, and he's made, it's interesting that as a publicly financed candidate, I mean, that sort of brought that issue to the fore again. Should we have more public financing? Here's a candidate who decided early on to do it that way, and it's interesting he's not having more success, but at least he's shown that it can be done.
Mm-hmm. You're covering some stuff going on at Vermont Yankee. And that was really your wheelhouse, your real beat when you were a reporter. So what's going on down at Vermont Yankee?
The Entergy released its site assessment this morning of what it will cost to remove the spent fuel and start to decommission the place, the nuclear plant. It's a much larger estimate than we had previously heard. It's going to be $1.24 billion, they're saying, in 2014 dollars. I haven't read through the report. Susan Keese is covering it for us, but it's... It's certainly a larger figure. They're also planning, as you probably know, to put it in safe store, which is just sort of keep it idle and not do the decommissioning immediately and let the thing cool off in terms of radioactivity, and then also let the fund build up to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what the estimate was before?
I think it was below a billion.
Yeah. And they had about 600
something in the fund.
Jeez, I wonder what hit that took this week. But it's not in wildly speculative stuff either.
No.
But I don't think anything did well this week.
No. The other stuff we're covering, I mean, there's this Fairpoint strike that I mentioned. So that's sort of, we try and plan out stories, you know, on a week ahead basis, but then we have to react. Like this Yankee thing we heard about yesterday, it was going to come out, but That will be a big story this evening for us.
Any of the other statewide races of interest, do you think, to people?
Well, I think the congressional race is always interesting. But again, we have such a strong record of reelecting incumbents. There's no, I mean, Peter Welch is way ahead. Attorney General, I was sort of surprised several months ago that no stronger GOP candidate emerged there. The write-in candidate has done pretty well in debates. There are a number of state's attorney's races that we're hope to follow. We've covered one up in Caledonia County. There's an interesting race in Washington County and an interesting race in Rutland County for state's attorney. We'll try and wrap those up at some point. Those aren't statewide, obviously. And then we're covering the control or the balance of power in the Senate and the House.
Yeah, I thought Bob Kinzel had a good story the other morning talking about what some of the consequences are for Vermont, and it's pretty significant.
Yeah, I was talking about the local state house, but that's, I think, the big story election night will be Pat Leahy. What happens to him? He's pro tem. He's
chair of the judiciary.
If the Democrats lose the Senate, then Vermont loses a substantial voice and substantial piece of political clout.
But he'd still be pretty high. He'd still be very high up on appropriations. Would Vermont actually lose any money if the Republicans are in control?
I think so. But that depends on what he's able to do. If the I would think they'd be inclined to spend less on blue states.
Yeah, and Bernie Sanders will obviously lose his chairmanship too, and he's been pretty aggressive.
Yeah. I think that's a story we're going to be following all night.
Thanks for coming in. And here's a bag of Vermont Coffee Company coffee for you.
All right.
Don't share that with anybody else at your office. That's just for you. And say hi to everybody over there at our competitor collaborators against the evils of the world out there. Thanks for joining us. John Dillon is the news director of Vermont Public Radio. That is going to wrap things up for hour number one. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Love to take your calls the rest of the way. Maybe you have some thoughts, comments on something we've already talked about this morning, or maybe you want to bring something new to the table. We welcome that. 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. Keep your dial right here. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugarbush, 96.5 in Barrie and Montpelier, 101.9 in the fabulous Northeast Kingdom, and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier. News coming your way next.